The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I think I have a feeling Pat is being sarcastic as he's bringing me up to speed on a new House bill that has passed. Of course, the health care thing fell apart because somehow or another, we can't figure out a way to help people who have had their deductible go up to $5,000 and their insurance payment going up to $1,500 a month. We can't figure out a way to make the free market free, so they would solve that problem. And at the same time, we can't seem to figure out how to help people who just can't afford anything to make sure that they're, you know, nobody's dying on the streets, but they're not using our hospitals as, you know, a doctor's office, that people can actually receive health care. Somehow or another, Congress can't get that done. Why? It's all about politics. It's all about the next election. Somebody needs to have a problem so they can ask you for more money and they can ask you for your support. And of course, we can continue to divide each other. Let me give you something good out of Washington, D.C. Charlie Gard, the little kid, 11-month-old, who, because of socialized medicine in the United Kingdom, he is being told he has to die. Even though the parents have the money, there is apparently a chance that his life can be changed here in America. So did anybody in Washington do something good? Yes. Let's start there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
There's a couple things we want to do today. First of all, I want to bring you up to speed on the Donald Trump, the latest allegation. But I want you to know this program, I am sick and tired of, I can't even watch cable news. Are you guys watching cable news? I can't even watch it anymore. This is part of my job. We run a network that is supposedly, you know, bringing you up to speed on everything that everybody's talking about. And I cannot watch a show that is starting with Donald Trump because there's no what is the use of this? Here's an idea. Why don't we let the investigators do their investigation? We'll just keep you up to speed from time to time on what's happening. We'll keep all the stories as they roll out. And when there is something actual to report, then we'll report on that. Yesterday, there was another disturbing story. There was two. One, Donald Trump Jr. has added yet another name now to this meeting that he had. I mean, why would you do this? Just come out with all the names. So they let another drip come in and named somebody else who was in the room. And then we find out that Donald Trump had an hour-long meeting one-on-one with Vladimir Putin. And the disturbing part of this is that he did not bring the American translator, which is against national security protocol. You have to have the American translator so the American president can trust that everything's being translated correctly. That's a rule that was broken, went in. Donald Trump said it was nothing. But for the love of Pete, can you stop doing things that just make it worse? But do we know anything? No. What we're going to get is a bunch of people on television telling us that Trump is God and the other group telling us that he is Satan. I don't think we have a ruling in either of those. Everybody is just reinforcing their opinion. That's the update on the Trump thing. Let's move on until we have some actual facts to back things up. Now, let me take you to Charlie Gard. Charlie Gard is this 11-month-old kid who has a rare genetic disease. He's being kept literally against his will at a children's hospital. The children's hospital in England is the children's hospital that gets all of the royalties for Peter Pan. So as every time Peter Pan movie is made, every time Peter Pan books sell, this is the recipient of those monies. They are holding him because the parents say, we don't want him to die in this hospital. We want to take him. The Vatican has said that they would take him. The Vatican gave Vatican citizenship. And in America, there is a doctor who is now over in England examining Charlie that is saying, I think we have some procedures that we can do here that may work, may not. Now, if the family didn't have money, you would have, to me, at least a case that the hospital could say, look, you know, we don't have the money to have experimental stuff going on, et cetera, et cetera. But it would at least be a conversation of the value of life. What we're having now is who is the guardian here? What right does the government have to tell the parents you can't have experimental treatment? It's not like the people who say, I'm going to pray cancer away. I'm going to pray AIDS away. In my opinion, you have a right to do that. We always stop that because we say, oh, the children, if we can just save one life, we've got to interfere with these parents. This is the exact opposite. This is the state interfering with the parents who are saying, my child has a chance to live. They have $1.7 million. So they can take him out of the hospital, move him, and have this experimental procedure done. But the government doesn't want to let go because they're going to have this problem all over the United Kingdom if they do. So they're holding on. The Supreme Court of the United Kingdom has also ruled. They are holding off on pulling his feeding tube until this American doctor finishes his exam, and then they will consider what he has to say. Yesterday, Congress granted him citizenship, him and the family, so they could come over from the United Kingdom. They have citizenship, so they have full rights as citizens of the United States to take their baby out of this hospital and bring them over to the United States. My question is, if the United States government was doing this to you and the situation was reversed and you know how you feel about the United States, well, think about the best times of how you feel about the United States. I would relinquish my citizenship so fast from a country that was trying to take my child away and telling me that they have power over all of the decisions, life and death, of my child. Am I alone in that?
Oh, no.
I can't even imagine if this child dies in the hospital, if I am that family, I relinquish my citizenship. I don't want to be a part of that country.
And I think I'd be a little less than polite to the hospital administration.
Angry letter? Or is that what you
would
go that far?
Strongly worded.
Oh, my gosh.
Imagine a Texan in this situation.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my gosh. Imagine Marcus Luttrell.
I would have been
arrested
by now. There'd
be a SEAL team out taking that child out.
The parents are behaving really well under the circumstances. This is like the... do you remember the co-parent thing from Canada?
Yes.
That people think that they're the parents,
yes,
but they're only co-parents with the government?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know that the actual parents are even co-parents
anymore. Not in this.
Once you check,
and this happens in American children hospitals as well. Once you check the child in, the child is the responsibility of the hospital, not yours anymore. You can't check them out. I mean, it is Hotel California. We found that out with the what was her name? The I want to say LaPierre, but it wasn't. The girl
Pelletier.
Pelletier,
mm-hmm,
that checked in and...
they wouldn't let her go.
Wouldn't let her go. And then...
What was that, a year? Two years?
A year and a half, and she's never really recovered from that.
Yeah.
She's back at home and never really recovered. Sad.
Very.
But, I mean, you said they don't want to do this because they're going to get this situation all over the country. But what situation? The opportunity for children to live better lives? To live longer lives?
Once this system, this is my understanding of it, once this system declares that okay, well, you can leave because maybe there is something, then every child that is having a problem, the doctors are like, well, I want another opinion. I want to try this. And
well, I mean, again, I think when you're a government healthcare program, first of all, don't have one. But if you do have one, then I think they do get the right to decide what they pay for. I mean, at some point, they can make that decision.
Problem. They don't have the right to trap you in it.
That's the point.
Like, if the hospital says, I don't have any money to treat it, you should be able to leave or take that
Fine.
Child
we'll
out of the hospital.
Somebody can.
And if I wanted to do Wiccan stuff, you're not doing anything. If I wanted to just, you know, burn a bunch of, you know, incense and dance around an open fire in the middle of the night, that's what I'm going to do because you're doing nothing.
I saw on the internet incense cures almost everything.
Right?
Yep, yep.
Right?
It's one simple trick
that.
With incense will cure almost everything. But it's true. Like, the downside of this for the hospital is I can't see it. Because, yes, you're right. They don't want to have a fight with a parent on the way they treat people. And that's understandable. I disagree with the way they do things there, obviously. But the situation where they're saying, we will take the kid, we will bring them somewhere else, you will not be treating them, we will pay for it.
Right.
These things eliminate all of those
all
concerns.
All of those concerns. All of those concerns. We'll get into what happened in healthcare here in a second. But do you guys know the history of this hospital? Do you know the history of Peter Pan? Do you know what that story's really about?
It's really twisted, isn't it?
It's kind of. It's dark, but it's not necessarily twisted.
The original story
is
pretty dark.
Yeah, no, the original story is very dark. The original story is about a child. Peter Pan is dying. And it's a story about a child that doesn't want to die. And so goes off to Never Never Land, where all the children are. And so the entire thing is about dying children and how they go off someplace. And the parents come and rescue Peter Pan. And so the parents get help for Peter Pan. How does this hospital continue to get the money from Peter Pan when they're doing the exact opposite? They're cutting him loose and going, no, stay in Never Never Land. And that's why the ticking clock of the crocodile, the ticking clock is time. And that's why Captain Hook is afraid of time, because time will kill as the time goes by.
Right.
You're going to die. And here's this hospital that has that as its legacy, and it's doing the exact opposite. Our sponsor this half hour is SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe is a great product made by a guy whose grandfather, I'm trying to remember, invented something for the tank, or something really important for the tanks during World War II, was kind of an American tinkerer and inventor. So his grandson is going to, I think, MIT or Harvard. I think it's MIT. And, he wants to follow in his grandfather's footsteps and, you know, wants to do something great but has no idea. And this idea comes to him kind of by mistake. All of his friends, they live in these row houses in Boston. And there's robberies going on in the neighborhood because they're not, you know, it's student housing. So there's robberies going on in the neighborhood, and they said, we got to come up with something. We need an alarm system, and we can't put an alarm system in here because we're just tenants. So what are we going to do? He said, I'll come up with something. So he comes up, and he just jimmy-rigs this wireless system. And so there's wires hanging on the windows and everything else, but it works. Everybody in the area starts saying, hey, can I buy one of those from you? So he starts making them for the people in the neighborhood. It catches on. Now it becomes SimpliSafe. You walk into stores, SimpliSafe, you'll see their equipment there. SimpliSafe is here. SimpliSafe is at my house. SimpliSafe is the best way to wire your home because it started by, I can't do it the way everybody else is. I can't drill holes in the walls. We're students, so we can't have, a 1 or 5 year contract on this. So we don't want any contracts. And that's what they built, the simplest way to keep your family and your home safe. No contracts, around-the-clock monitoring is $14.99 a month. It will call police for you. It has a 105-decibel siren. It has high-definition cameras. Somebody breaks glass or a window. Somebody opens the window or opens the door. Somebody moves. It takes a high-definition picture of them, calls police, and it's $14.99 a month. Oh, and by the way, you own the system. So if you're living and renting a house, or if you, you know, want to own your own system so you control your own destiny, it's unbelievably inexpensive. And right now they're having their biggest summer sale ever, $100 off the exclusive summer package. Limited time only. Go to simplysafebeck.com. $100 off right now. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Want to see Glenn live? If you're coming to Texas, you can. Join us at Mercury Studios in Dallas for a taping of Glenn's television show. To reserve your seat, email tickets at glennbeck.com with your information. That's tickets at glennbeck.com. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Oh, my gosh. We have some amazing news for you.
Some really good news about the wall.
Oh,
you heard the good news yet?
No, I have not heard the good news about the wall.
Oh, my gosh. We were skeptical at first, but I got to say.
They're getting it done.
They came through.
They came through.
The House voted to fund the wall yesterday. All 28 miles of it. All 28 miles.
Wait a minute. Hold on just a second.
That whole border between the United States and Mexico that stretches clear out there for 28 miles.
Right.
We're gonna. That we're doesn't. Gonna
where,
that.
So where is the border exactly? I may have missed that.
Well,
at the bottom
of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California.
For people who aren't from the Southwest,
28 miles.
It's about 7 miles in California.
Right.
7 miles in Arizona. 7 miles in New Mexico, and 7 miles in Texas.
That's exactly.
So the map is a little distorted because
right.
It looks a little different
it looks,
than that.
Really?
It right, looks where, like so it where, might be so as much what part as 30 of, miles, but it's not.
So what part of the, what are they doing?
They included $498 million.
Well, when you say that, you mean Mexico?
No, I mean Congress.
Right.
You know, Congress.
Mexican Congress?
No, the United States Congress.
Well, but.
$498 million.
But Mexico is paying for it.
No. There's no mention of that whatsoever. But this will...
We're going to send them a bill. I'm sure we already have.
Oh, we're going to invoice
them?
Yeah,
okay. Invoice.
That's it.
Yeah, we are putting up the money first, but we're going to invoice them.
This will take care of the 28 miles, though, in the Rio Grande Valley for a new levy. And it will amount to about $17.8 million per mile.
So that sounds appropriate.
They're doing it
for
economically,
offense.
Too, because... You know, if there's one thing Trump is, it's a construction guy. He can build things.
Right.
So he can do it economically.
Yeah.
Good. And, good. $17 million a mile? How? Incomprehensible.
It is. It is.
Are you a construction guy?
I'm not. I'm okay. Not. Yeah.
You're an accountant.
He's not that either.
No, you're not that either.
No, I just.
You're not in the construction business. You're not an accountant.
So why don't you shut up?
You're a map maker?
I'm not.
Huh. Doesn't seem like you're qualified to comment on this at all.
Really?
Yeah, you know, you're probably right. I have right. This thing called common sense.
Ah.
And it indicates to me.
Yeah, that's not so common anymore. Not using that.
It indicates to me that $17.8 million a mile may be high for a fence.
How high is the fence? You don't know that.
Maybe it's a million feet high.
Maybe it is the first mile of the fence. They're just trying it out, and it's 17 miles high. You don't know. It could be a mile.
That'd be efficient.
By 17 miles.
No one would get through that section.
No one is going to get
Nobody's
through.
Nobody's going
to get
that.
Through it.
How
They're
high is
really
it before
over.
You hit the envelope of space? That's like a mile
mm-hmm.
or something.
Okay.
So you don't think so?
No, I'm pretty sure.
Might be a little higher or lower? Am I high or low? Price
you're,
is right.
You're not. You're
space
not.
Is higher or?
You're not in the aviation world, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not a pilot or an astronaut. Mm. Which
hard to detect.
But I am tall, so I am closer to space than most people.
That is true,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. So anyway,
I guess I really don't care how much Mexico pays for the wall. I mean, like the bottom line is if they can pay $17
built.
Million a wall or $2 million, whatever the price is that they're charged for it, who cares? It's their money. You know,
right.
Got nothing to do with us.
Right,
losers.
Right. Right. Okay.
Oh, man.
We're just going to skip over that story. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to you a little bit about socialism. And, hey, I like Snapchat. You must like Facebook. How bad can socialism be? After all, it gave us social media. Right? I think. Listening to the college students, that's what you might think socialism is. More on that when we come back.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. As we begin our journey today to try to figure out the world, let's take a look at what's happening on college campuses. There's a few stories, but I want to hit this one, and I want you to hear how positive socialism has become on college campus, and yet how there's really nothing behind that. Here's the latest survey on college campuses on socialism.
In your opinion, is socialism a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, I think people kind of throw that word around to try to scare you, but if helping people is socialism, then I'm for it.
It could really benefit our country in the future.
I think it's a good idea.
Socialism as a concept, as a philosophy, is good. I think that it's got a bad rep.
Trying to spread the wealth is definitely a good thing in America, and okay. It's definitely a thing that's needed.
There's a lot of things with social welfare that I think would be good to have.
Do you have a positive reaction to socialism or a negative one?
I'd say a more positive one. I'm definitely more open to it.
But we should have a standard of living for all people. By default, that should just be available.
If we did it democratically, then we could really incorporate socialism.
It definitely seems like a more feasible option, and it could help more people. As a broad term, it could help more people.
Yep.
How would you define socialism?
I mean, honestly, that definition gets thrown around a lot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure.
How would you view what socialism is, though? Economically, what is socialism? Economically. I'm going to think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez.
I guess just specifically just, you know, getting rid of that wealth gap in the United States.
How would I describe it as little words possible?
How would you define socialism?
I mean, it's definitely more of an open form of government, and it feels lot more accessible to a lot more people. Being more accessible, and more kind of like equal ground.
What does that mean necessarily, though?
To be quite honest, I don't know.
Nobody was more accessible than Benito Mussolini. Nobody.
Adolf Hitler.
Except for
Stalin.
Adolf.
Yeah. Stalin was pretty good.
They were all pretty accessible.
Yeah.
You know, it is true that socialism has a bad rap. And you know, 100 million dead will do that to you on occasion.
Yes.
But yeah, it's really been unfairly treated.
Yeah. What's amazing is they all said it was a good idea. No, you're only identifying the word. You're identifying, you don't know what the idea is. You just know the word socialism, and you associate that with good things. So all the good things, well, it's more open. No, how? How is it possible? Ask Charlie Gard's parents if it's more open.
Yeah.
How is that possible? It's because they're not being taught anything. Nobody is questioning anything. How can you go to college? Well, I know you have to have a safe zone. College should be the least safe place on earth intellectually. The university should be the place where you are thrown up against the wall and challenged on everything you believe.
Well, we're focusing on the idea that they're completely wrong in these opinions, which is true. However, how can you have an opinion at all if you don't know what it is?
Yes.
That's really a bigger problem.
No, but wait a minute.
And the only thing they know about it is, to them, it's positive because somebody has talked positively about it in the past.
Okay,
so that's obviously what, their teachers?
Let me ask you this. How many of us are different? How many of us on the conservative side are really that different? Ask people. What are the five freedoms that are guaranteed in the First Amendment? Can't name them.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the Bill of Rights. Tell me what it means. Tell me how it works. You can't. It's an idea. The idea of freedom, the idea of America, has worked for a while, but we're no longer teaching the actual principles behind it. And so we're doing the same thing. The reason why Fox News can say fake news to CNN and CNN people can say fake news to Fox is because we have conflated, we've made news the mixing of opinion and fact. When I was on Fox, I used to say all the time, and tell me anybody who has ever said this, have you ever heard anybody on these cable shows say this? I want you to understand clearly, I am an opinion guy. I'm not a news guy. I'm an opinion guy. So when you're looking at these things, I will tell you, this is fact. Now, how I connect things together, those things all happen, but these are the conclusions that I'm drawing.
I have seen that on both CNN and Fox. Unfortunately, it was you saying it on both
yes,
of them.
On both
so,
networks.
That was a...
So what happens is we've confused opinion with fact. So when they're saying socialism, how do you feel about socialism? It's good because they've heard somebody that they respect say that it's good and tied it into some sort of this wouldn't be happening if we just had socialism.
They tied it into equality and fairness.
Right.
And that's what resonated with these kids.
And oppression.
Yep.
We wouldn't have oppression if you had socialism. Well,
not if you do it democratically.
And what exactly does that mean? I mean, you know, Hitler, the Nazis were the National Socialists. So it was socializing and having a national attitude toward it. Germany is the best. Communism is workers of the world. So it's socialism with an international bent. That's the only difference between those two. It's the same system. It's just one's national and one is global. How many people in college even know that basic fact? How many in college even know that it works in Sweden because up until recently, and now it's all falling apart, everybody was basically the same. Everybody had the basic same background, the basic same color, lifestyle, everything. They were united. You don't take this as the United States is the most diverse country in the world. And yet for a long time, we worked together pretty well. We have our flare-ups of racism, but we generally, everybody kind of melts back into us. Well, we've destroyed all of that. You can't have socialism without an iron fist if you have a whole bunch of different people. When I was I was in L.A. and I was asking a group of guys from Silicon Valley. So tell me, just play this game out. Let's say in 2020, you get Bernie Sanders and you get a whole bunch of people in Congress and the Senate that also have the same idea. You get all Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warrens and you control that for the next 20 years. You realize there are people like me that will never go along with socialism, that we will fight it every step of the way. At some point, what do you do with the 40% of America who says, I'm not going there?
Oh, we found out from the Weather Underground plan, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Be sent to camps to be re-educated, and if they still won't comply, 25 million people might have to die.
So now let's reverse that. Let's say you get somebody who is a nationalist who is on the other side, the worst of the right. What happens to the 40% of the liberals that won't go there? After 20 years, you got to do something. Do you re-educate them? Do you campify them? What do you do?
You're saying we're in the middle of a formula for harmony is what you're describing.
Yes.
Yes. This is all going to go really well.
Yes.
And you're not exactly uplifting here, I would say.
Well, here's the uplifting message. And this is one that I know people don't like to hear, but I want you just to let it wash over you for a while. And it's not one that sounds good, but it actually is. The truth will set you free, but it's going to make you miserable first. Okay. It's really the truth. We've all done this. We all do this in our life. We build ourselves a nice little story that lets us exist and live. And then, unfortunately, if we go too far off the rails, the truth is in front of us. And we can either fight against that truth, which most of us do, fight against that truth until the truth destroys us and you just reset your life, depending on where your bottom is. Or you look at the truth and you reevaluate. And because it is the truth and you're not living it, you're like, oh, crap. And it will make you miserable because you have to change and do hard things. But then after a while, it sets you free. And you're like, oh, my gosh, how did I not recognize this? The truth is, we as Americans, and I mean both sides, I'm not talking to the conservatives. I'm talking to the conservatives, liberals, independents, everybody. We have to stop trying to win. We have to start trying to reconcile and live next to each other. We have to start understanding each other. Right now, everybody wants the argument that will allow them to win. There's no way to win in this situation because it implies a loser, and those losers are not going away. Do you think the losers, if you got everything you wanted on the conservative side, do you think they're just going to go away? They're not going to go away. And if you bash them in the head and continue to just say, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, it's only going to get stronger.
Great example of this. I'm reading the Joshua Green book about Steve Bannon. And it goes through the kind of history of how they, you know, Trump and Bannon, you know, started, they met and how they worked together and goes through the whole thing. And it traces this, the Trump thing back. And this is, you know, somewhat well known, that takes it back to the 2012 or 13 White House Correspondents' Dinner, where they invited Trump to that dinner. And he sat there and he got berated by not only Obama, but by, I think it was Seth Meyers who hosted it. Yep. And they destroyed him to the point that he was so angry, he wasn't even hiding it anymore, and walked out of that thing right afterwards. The media after that event just glorified themselves at how they had just destroyed this petty little nothing of a man. And now he runs the free world.
Right.
And he was motivated by that event. And he was so pissed off he wasn't being taken seriously that he decided to that set into effect a series of events that now has that guy as president of the United States.
And a guy who says, you punch me, I'll punch back twice as hard.
They felt like they won that night. Yeah. Did they? Did they win?
Right. You don't know. You don't know. No, both sides. Both sides. Try to humiliate. Look what the press did to the right, to the Tea Party. They tried to humiliate and name call. They never listened to the Tea Party, never. And look at what those people have done. Now, reverse. Let me just take it up. Me. I was effective at poking them right where they live. You think they have gotten better or worse? Media Matters, in Cheryl Atkinson's new book, Media Matters took me on and they designed all the stuff to destroy people because of me and used it first on me. Okay? What do you say we start listening to it? Forget about politics. And I'm not talking about you not paying attention to what's happening in Washington. I'm saying the people in Washington don't matter as much as the people that you interact with every day. Stop trying to win with the people you interact with every day. Start trying to listen to each other. Start trying to realize that we have a different point of view. Now, how are we going to live together? Because that's what we have to do. We have to live with one another or we will kill one another. We're balkanizing our country. That's not a good thing. Now this, our sponsor this half hour is CarShield. Having to fix your car costs so much money. Nothing is cheap when it comes to your car, and it's not like it used to be where you could open up the hood and fix something. You can't do that anymore, so now you have to have the mechanic. If you have a car that doesn't have coverage, doesn't have a warranty, you can get one now from carshield.com. A new water pump could set you back $500. Replacing your air conditioner can cost as much as $1,500, and a new engine could cost you about $5,000. You can have your favorite mechanic. You can go to the dealership, and you don't have to worry about getting paid. CarShield arranges the payment and deals right with the mechanic, so you're out of that. Sign up today. You're going to get the VIP treatment from CarShield's administrators, 24/7 roadside assistance, and a rental car while yours is in the shop. Save yourself the high repair bills by going and getting yourself a new warranty from CarShield.com. You can call 800-CAR-6100. That's 800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck. You get 10% off. Also, you can visit CarShield.com and use the promo code Beck. Save 10%. CarShield.com. Promo code Beck. A deductible may apply.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
All right. So yesterday, it didn't take long for the Congress to shut down the repeal of Obamacare, did it? All you needed was four Republicans. And somehow or another, those four Republicans are heroes when the idea of setting the market free again is just apparently so unpopular with the GOP.
Well, I think any honest agenda for improving health care must start with the repeal of the dishonestly named Affordable Care Act. That's, of course, from the ancient 2016 GOP platform.
Yeah. How old were you in 2016?
I don't even remember it.
It's like I need a time machine to go back that
far. Oh, man.
The only one that was an honest Republican was Collins. She's never been for the repeal. Mm. She shouldn't get any heat. She was the only honest one. Every other one ran, raised money on the repeal of Obamacare, and changed their mind yesterday when it became a reality.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Tom Scott, the co-founder of Nantucket Nectars, is with us in studio right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Cause we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Tom Scott, welcome to the program. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Tom, you, let's start. Gas crisis, 1970s?
Research.
Gas crisis, 1970s. You become an entrepreneur. How old were you?
I think I was 10. When was the gas crisis? 76,
70,
I think?
Yeah. 73 to 76, four. Somewhere in that area?
Yeah.
So
near my house were the gas lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I started selling them things, coffee, muffins, and things. Yeah. And
people can't relate to gas lines, but this is when we were having an energy crisis. And people, you could only go if you were on even days, if your license plate was an even number. And so people would line up for hours at the gas stations.
Which I still don't understand exactly why that was. Maybe they could only turn the machine on at a certain time. I don't know.
Yeah.
But on Brookville Road, I lived right on the DC line. There would be this long line of cars. And I used to sell them food and things.
So is that where you, by the way, I don't think you'd be able to do that now without a license. Is that where you got bitten by the entrepreneurial bug?
You know, I don't know the answer to that because, and I'm saying that, I'm not trying to be cute, but the concept of an entrepreneur is such a modern phenomenon. You know, it's so celebrated and labeled in a way. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I think more than anything else, I think of it as like the Wild West. You know, there's like this spirit of adventure where you want to go out and be Tom Sawyer for a moment.
Yeah. Isn't that what an entrepreneur is?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. But my point is only this. I really thought it was just fun. You know, I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to go get rich. It was more just, this is going to be fun.
But again, isn't that the best entrepreneur? I really believe money is a byproduct. It doesn't, if you focus on money, you're not going to get wealthy. Yeah. If you focus on doing something that you love, that you enjoy, and you are making somebody else's life easier. You know, people are caught in their cars and they want their coffee or they're hungry. They've been waiting. You were going to go have fun serving them something. Yeah. Money is a byproduct.
That's right. I think that's so true. You know, it's funny when I do this thing at Brown University. I went to Brown University and I do a class there every year. And, you know, it used to be a business class. It's now turned into an entrepreneurial class. And people talk about their Series A, their Series B kids. And I think to myself, which I didn't know what any of that was, because no one knew what any of that was at the time. And I think like, wow, this has gotten so formulaic. That's why I'm kind of like the word kind of bums me out, because the notion of startup or whatever you want to call it has become so formalized.
Yeah.
That it's
less disruptive.
Yeah, and I don't want to be that. Like, there's something about that that I just, that's not interesting to me. It's not, that's not the Wild West. It's the, it's this other thing.
So you and a friend, college. You start mixing, was it peach juice and water together?
Yeah, again, very, very good. Similarly, boats in Nantucket Harbor are on hooks. They're on moorings.
Yes.
So they don't have access to the land. So we started a store where we would go around selling them things on a boat, store on a boat. And one of the things that we sold was juice. And it was a peach juice, the first one. You know, this is in the days, and I know this is ridiculous and somewhat arbitrary, but Tropicana Pure Premium hadn't happened yet, right? So juice was bad. I mean, just generally speaking, if you wanted a juice, it tasted badly, period.
Upgrade from Tang, but not much.
Exactly. I mean, that's where we were.
Yeah.
So we were making something that was...
fresh.
And just way better.
Yeah. How did you go from there to the boardroom with PepsiCo, selling for how much?
I'm not allowed to tell you.
a lot.
More or less than $30?
More.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll tell you this. The first time someone tried to buy the business, I was on one of those Motorola flip phones. I remember opening it. You know, you can remember certain things in your life. And the guy said, I want to buy your company. And I said, I don't want to sell it. And he said, and which was always my line, because somebody told me a company is worth four times net. Well, we didn't have much net. He said, you don't want to hear the number? I said, all right, tell me the number. And he told me the number, and I thought,
what was the number?
Wow. I want to sell my company.
What was the number?
I had no idea. It was probably more than 100 times what I thought it was worth.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was staggering. I had no clue. And again, back to what I was saying before.
You weren't doing it for that.
Well, people talk about exits, and I'm not trying to sound holier than that.
Yeah.
I just didn't know. I was clueless.
Yeah. So you sell it. Then what happens to your life? When you are up at the top, you're making, you know, Nantucket Nectars. Everybody in the country knows it. And who were you at that time? Who had you turned into? From the kid that just wanted to go have fun selling muffins to that guy. Yeah. Who were you?
I thought it was silly to the end. It's juice. I mean, really, like, what are we talking about here? This is silly. It's a child's toy in a way, right?
Yeah.
But I started getting praised like crazy, you know? And this is at the very beginning of .com. So entrepreneurs are hot. And I'm just a person who feels slightly less than. It's just how I go through life, which I'm not alone in that. We all sort of like, we have some degree of self-hatred. And maybe I'm wrong, but I know lots of us.
Yeah.
Well, if you get praised enough times I mean, who is the most praised human in modern history? Michael Jackson.
I would say Jesus, but...
I'm being really modern.
Okay, all right.
And look what happens.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not... But just looked at the way he looked at the end of his life, you know?
Yeah.
There's something about praise that's not very healthy. And Michael Jackson's not alone, by the way. And I'm not comparing myself to Michael Jackson, but I became somebody who didn't know where my center was. You know, the normal oppositional forces that we all sort of go through life with are healthy. They're there for a reason. And I think when they come out of whack, they come out of whack. So I was out of whack, is a long story short. And like raising money in the year 2000, when you're 34 years old and you've just sold a business, it's pretty easy.
When did you know, was that phone call on the Motorola flip phone the moment you knew you actually had something, or was the business successful before that?
You know, I think the Motorola flip phone moment was a moment of, you know, having some sense of value that was dreamlike. You know, almost everything in my life has been so incremental that it's hard for me to always sort of identify moments. And in a way, if you think about it, like my recognition of the value of the company was not incremental. It was not in my kind of brain or in my soul. But maybe that's why it was so disruptive in a sense, you know?
So I have been rich. I have been poor. The problems of being rich are just bigger. I mean, don't get me wrong. Being rich doesn't suck, but the problems are just the same. They're just bigger. But money can be very corrosive to a soul. Fame is the, I think it's battery acid on people. I wouldn't wish real fame on anybody. At what point did you hit bottom from such a high?
You know, for me, it was, it happened more than once. When you get that far out of whack, you're going to have problems in your relationships. You're going to have problems just sort of navigating through life. And if you think about it, you know, if you're off course by 0.1 degree and you're headed to Spain, you could end up in wherever, right? So I think I had points where I recognized I was off course more than once. But, you know, one is I took a company through bankruptcy. I had also struggled with, alcohol, drugs and alcohol, probably around 2005 or so. And I took the company into bankruptcy in 2012. What's important is I left the business in 2007, but I went back to take it through bankruptcy. And if you've never been through bankruptcy, it is almost exactly like, and I know I'm being a little dramatic here, but what are the things called? Buzzards? What are those birds?
Yeah, buzzards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they are alive and healthy. And they feed on a carcass. And in that sense, like, if you take the drama out of it, that would make sense. If you're the carcass, it is dramatic.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Now, I would say one of the things that let me just say this. So you asked the question. They're laying out the case for the judge. And the judge has to sort of make choices that I think are in the best interest of whatever remains of this thing that's in bankruptcy.
You sold to PepsiCo for a lot of money.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you lose all that money?
No.
Okay. But you lost a lot of it. You lost all the investment of anything that you had done in this new company.
Yeah, in this new venture, which was called Plum TV. And when you're in the bankruptcy court, they lay out all the facts.
Yeah.
And if you're hearing these facts laid out, you're thinking, who is this guy?
Right.
Me. And then so finally the judge says, and I had suffered a lot through this. This was very painful, personally painful, legally painful, financially painful. And then the judge says, and this is going to sound goofy, but the judge says, who is Thomas W. Scott? Which is me, right? And I thought, that's a really good question. You know, and I'm not, I know that sounds corny, but I'm being literal. Like I had a moment of clarity where I thought, it's a great question. And all I can do right now, like,
did you raise your hand or you're like, you know, judge, that's a good question. I'm questioning. It might be that guy because I don't want it to be this guy.
Right. But I stood up and I thought, and here's the thing. People have been through a lot worse tragedy than this. And I want to just say that that's of course true. Right. But all I could do at that point was go in the direction out, which is just do the next right thing. Keep doing the next right thing. And so I did. I stood up and I started to sort of speak and share the story. And I think there was a moment, probably 5 or 10 minutes after I was on the stand, where I felt that the judge had connected with me, because the judge's job is essentially preserve whatever value is left here.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, so MF Global was in bankruptcy when we were there, and Hostess was in bankruptcy when they were there. And those were high profile.
Yeah, that was the end of the Twinkie.
That was the end of the Twinkie, but it's back. It's back.
Yeah.
They've got cotton candy Twinkies.
Well, and it's back because I actually think our bankruptcy system is pretty good.
I do too.
Yeah. So,
I mean, debtor prison was pretty good, but our bankruptcy system is probably a tad bit better.
Right, yeah. Right. So, you know, it was sort of, for me, that was a major turning point in just sort of understanding, like, what does value mean, you know?
Okay, so let's play a little game. We'll play Truth or Dare. And my dare is that you will tell us how much you sold Nantucket Nectars for if you don't answer true. I'll start. Truth, I fired a guy for bringing me the wrong kind of pin at the height of my alcoholism and height of my being a really bad guy.
Did you say pen or pin?
Pen.
Pen.
P-E-N.
Okay, I'm going to have to say true.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Now, truth or dare for you. What was the worst? Describe your worst moment. And moment. I'm leading to someplace because you're not this guy now. And you have done some remarkable things since this time. And so I want people to get a sense of, here's a guy who's been at the bottom selling muffins, went to the top, went back down to the bottom, not just financially, but also spiritually and everything else. And I want to show you the climb out and what he's doing now.
Yeah.
So you think about that.
All right.
And you can either give us the truth on that, or you can tell me how much you sold the company for.
Am I supposed to give the worst or just a story of significance?
Just a story of significance that shows how deep.
What an ass I was.
Yeah.
And just to reset for the audience, just four dudes playing Truth or Dare on the radio. No big deal. No big deal. Don't think about it.
Wow, that's weird. Okay. Here's our sponsor this half hour. It is Goldline. The vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff says North Korean missiles lack guidance but can now reach America. Asked during a hearing yesterday about a preemptive strike, the vice chairman said, "I think we have to entertain that potential option." That is frightening. If we start talking about preemptive strikes in North Korea, that changes the world. By the way, Donald Trump did not retract the deal we had with Iran, but he is now trying to stop them from building missiles. They already have the nukes. Now they're building because Obama just said, "Oh, you got to stop the nukes for 10 years. Okay, what about the missiles? Now they're trying to perfect the missiles. That's the part they didn't have. Perfect. The world is a very volatile place right now, and things could change in a heartbeat. I want you to call Goldline and get their free exclusive report from President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman, identifying the 5 threats to the economy. Goldline is also extending their price protection programs for as little as $2,500. You're going to get 3 months of price protection, meaning if the price of the gold goes down, they give you more gold to make up for that. And the more you spend, the more protection you get, all the way up to a year's worth of protection for $25,000 of investment. Check it out with your IRA or 401k, and make sure you read their important risk information and find out if buying gold or silver is right for you at 1-866-GOLDLINE. It's 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Just 4 guys sitting around playing Truth or Dare with Tom Scott, co-founder of Nantucket Nectars, and has gone on to do some pretty amazing things. We're just talking about the bottom of his life because he's doing some really incredible things that I want to talk to. But we've got about 3 minutes, and then I want to get to the good stuff.
Okay.
The bottom.
The bottom.
Where you were saying, man, I'm a horrible human being.
You know, I'm going to say something that's going to sound like it's a little unfair. But it's what I. But it's my. It's,
but I was never as bad as you guys.
No, I was. I might have been worse in many ways. But the. But to me, you know, bipolar and depression is a big issue, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not making light of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was really depressed. Uh-huh. I suffered from major depression. And when you were talking about it, I thought, what I found in my depression, which I'm not diagnosing everyone else, is that I was so self-centered as to be completely depressed. And I, in my case, am ashamed of that. I'm ashamed of how self-centered I had become. So when I think of the worst of me, because it's not money and it's, you know, I did embarrassing things. I didn't fire someone for the pen, but I did lots of stupid things.
See, for me, that is the same thing as being self-centered. That was how self-centered I was.
Right.
Nobody else mattered.
Well, and that's where, you know, you were talking earlier about the gas lines.
Notice
it is service.
Notice he's avoiding.
Am I avoiding it? Well, to be depressed on the couch is sad and embarrassing, but I wouldn't even want to tell you.
Yeah. Okay.
The lowest.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to avoid it. I'm telling you. I don't want to tell you because I don't want the problem that comes with that.
Yeah. Okay. So you're wiped out. What's the first thing you do to turn your life around?
You know, it is surrender for me. So what do I mean by that? At some point, it became clear to me that I am wrong.
Yes.
Like, I am off track, and whatever I think is meaningless. And so people kept, you know, I wanted to take drugs and alcohol out of my life. I wanted to live a happy life. And at some point, someone, and I know who the guy is, got through to me and said, you got to surrender. And I kind of thought, well, what does that mean? My father's a Marine. My brother's a Marine.
Yeah, you don't surrender.
You're right. My whole life is gut it out. That was my father's line, always, still is, gut it out. You know, surrender and gut it out, they're the opposite. Someone said, put this image in your head. Picture the strongest soldier on earth putting his sword down and just saying, I'm fighting for the wrong side. And that image stayed with me. And I thought, like, okay.
So now, what is he doing now? You're going to love this when we come back.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
We're with Tom Scott, co-founder of Nantucket Nectars, and about 5 years ago started something called the Nantucket Project, and you've gone back to school. You go into the Yale Divinity School, you've really changed your life, and you're looking to find the things that that change people, heal people. Explain, because you're meeting all kinds of great people right now.
Mm. You know, we say we're about what matters most. And on Fridays, we have our company meeting and we'll, all right, what mattered most? And people share that week. Now, you'll always get to love and family and community. Like, you always get there. But sometimes it's, you know, certain technological things, or sometimes it's political things. Tends not to be, frankly, that often, but it happens. And if you start going through that exercise, you know, I was listening earlier when the college kids and the socialism mm-hmm. thing you guys were talking about. And part of my reaction was, what you're dealing with there is, you know, so people say we live in an age of information overload. The truth is, information are those things that inform. They're not informing anymore.
No.
Right? There's so much of it that it really is disinformation, right? So it's this... This, the level of noise is so high that most people in our generation, it's hard for us to identify this world that we live in, mm-hmm. certainly vis-a-vis the world that we grew up in. So in the midst of all of that, you know, my own desire to start the Nantucket Project came from this sense of lostness that I think the media really makes worse. I have no, you know, Fox and CNN, and they should do whatever they want to do, which I'm all for. But I also think the net is very unhealthy, and that drama sells, and drama is in its essence kind of a lie. Not always, but generally speaking, drama is a lie. So you get so far off course And so, so long story short, from my point of view, the Nantucket Project was an attempt to tell the stories that matter most in a form that's useful most. Like, that's kind of the idea.
So you, you've been meeting some really interesting people. You know, where I wanted to get you last half hour was to the point of saying, I surrender.
Right.
Because people don't look at that. They look at it like the way you did. I'm fighting, you know, I'm fighting. I'm never going to surrender. I'm right. And then they don't understand the power of laying that sword down actually makes you much more powerful.
Yeah.
And not trying to win, but saying, I surrender. I'm not playing this game anymore because this game is wrong.
Mm.
We talk about oppression a lot in our society, and everybody is oppressed on something. And nobody wants to surrender because they think that you're giving the other side that was wrong a pass.
Yeah.
You are spending time in Rwanda with one of the greatest men alive today, and I don't know how many people know about him. The president of Rwanda is remarkable.
Mm.
We know Rwanda for the genocide. How many was it in a year? A million?
Almost a million.
Almost a million people killed, just slaughtered in the streets in a
90
year.
Days.
Yeah. In 90 days. I thought it was a year.
Yeah.
Imagine what that bloodbath was like. Okay. So now they have a new president and they're trying to heal from this. Tell me your experience with him.
Yeah. You know, we're making a film about them right now, and we had a meeting a few weeks ago where we viewed the film. And it's very hard for us to consider. So basically what happened is you've got Paul Kagame, who brought peace through strength, arms, effectively, in the beginning. And he sort of reluctantly agreed to be the leader, which in my heart I believe to be the case. In other words, he was a reluctant leader. And in the end, part of what he did that was brilliant, I would argue magnanimous, is he set up these trials, and the juries were made up of the families of the victims.
Well, you couldn't get a harsher jury.
Exactly. So I murdered your sister. You and your family are going to judge me as jury. Now, what I was asked to do is to stand up and say, to be very straightforward, I killed the following people in the following ways. And if you, the jury, the family, believed this person and felt they held true remorse, it's up to you what happens next. 90% of the people were let go, right?
Think of this.
Right.
Think of this. You're standing, you slaughtered, brutally raped and killed somebody.
Yeah.
You're standing in front of their family. You have to say, I did all of those things. I own up to all of it. I'm really sorry. Here's why I'm sorry. Here's how I'm sorry. And then they have to say, and because it's death penalty, isn't it?
I don't think it was death penalty. I think it may have been in some cases, okay. And I don't know for sure.
All right. But the other is you're free.
Right.
90%
were set free.
How does that happen?
Well, you think about it, which I'm not saying is wrong, but we as Americans, you know, a jury of the victim's family, no way, that would never work. Well, who's to say that? I mean, look at what's going on in Rwanda now. It's growing at 9%. Incredible peace amongst these former enemies. You know, they've got a democratically elected government that is a majority women run, in part for practical reasons, by the way.
Yeah, they killed a lot of the men.
But it's amazing. It's a miraculous story. And I think when I tell, the thing about this story is people, it bothers me, because I do it, when people hear it as an African story. This is a human story. These are human beings. And I firmly believe we are all capable of both sides of this equation. And it so much depends on the circumstances. But this is a beautiful story. And so like, what's our role in this? Part of what we try to do is don't make it seem distant. Don't make it seem African. It is African, of course, but this is who we are. I mean, a lot of what you guys were speaking about earlier, it is the nature of the way humans behave. And in the end, you know, forgiveness in Rwanda is so much more important than Snapchat, you know? Like, are we going to...
Whoa, what?
And that's, you know, and listen, I am very sympathetic. In today's world, to sort out priorities, you know, in our day, there were 1,000 of them. Yeah. Today, there's a million of them.
Yeah.
And so what do you put at the top? Like, how do you sort of populate the top? That's what we're trying to do. And when you really get the sense of Paul Kagame or the sense of Rwanda, it's staggering.
Who are the most incredible people that you have met who have shown this kind of turnaround, who have shown this kind of openness, turning point? What, I don't know what you would call it.
So I was in San Quentin prison about a year ago, a little less, and I met a guy named Chris Schumacher, and he was in a program in the prison. He was a crystal meth addict who had a sentence of 25 years to life for murder, and he was working in a program, long story short. I won't bore you with the details, but when I met him, I thought, God, this guy has a clarity that is amazing. We had a long conversation, and he owns up to the crime. He doesn't remember committing it because he was so tweaked out. But the guys impressed me on such a level. So at the end of the conversation, I said to him, I said, you're going to go back to your cell now. You seem like one of the happiest people I've ever met. Are you happy in your cell when you go back each night? And he said, absolutely, every night. Now you think about that. Picture me on the couch, right, with my million-dollar problems, all depressed, and this guy's back in his cell. So I'm relating, how does that relate to Paul Kagame? He said the most difficult thing he ever had to do in his life was to forgive himself. You know, and that may sound simple, and we may think that's easy. I think it's that's not, as hard a thing to do as there
I think
is.
It's hard. I think it's much harder than forgiving others.
Yeah.
Because you live with yourself. You look at yourself every day.
Right, and in his case, we're talking about murder.
Yeah.
He took a person's life.
So I want to introduce you to somebody today, since you're here in town. I just had dinner with a guy who's remarkable. He is, I talked about him off air a couple of days ago. We have to have him on the air. He's a guy who lives right around here, was in prison for 37 years, 36 and a half years, something like that. Wrongly accused for murder. Mm. Set up by the prosecutors. They said, plead guilty and we'll get you 10 years. Instead, he pleaded guilty and he got life in prison, no chance of parole. He's in for 37 years. He got out. He went in 1977, got out in 2012. And he is the most peaceful, decent guy you've ever met. I mean, remarkable man, remarkable man. And I don't know how. I kept looking for some bitterness. How do you not feel horrible? I mean, how do you not hold feelings? He said, I just didn't. He said, that was where I was, and I had to deal with it and move on and stay alive and stay positive. And it's an amazing story.
You know, I think if it's just the same guy, and you and I talked about this earlier, there was a time, and I hope it's the same person, but where he was plotting to kill the prosecutor, the detectives, like had to, and then sort of later forgave
them. I haven't heard that
of
part of it, so it may be.
It may be. But here's the thing. I would argue
that
and
would
I don't,
be your inclination, though,
that
right?
Would, of course.
I mean,
of
that,
course.
That would be the tendency for a lot of us.
Oh my gosh.
It's the 37 exact revenge.
Years. He got out. I said to him, I said, so what was the most shocking thing? He said, two things. He said, when I got into a car, he said, last time I was in a car was 1977. He said, getting into a car today is like...
Had they changed?
Yeah, he said, it was like a spaceship to me.
Yeah. Internet? Said, what about the internet?
He said, the other thing that had really changed was the culture. He said, there's no respect anymore. No respect for elders. No respect. He said, nobody has ever had to really pay a price for anything. He said, so there's no respect for anything. He said, that was shocking to him.
Yeah.
Tom, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
How can people follow you? And
check out the Nantucket Project, nantucketproject.com, and some of our films are there.
When does the film come out about Rwanda?
And it's a short,
later
right?
this year. It'll be a short. So Paul Kagame's coming to our gathering in the fall, in September. We'll keep shooting. What we tend to do is our films are always a work in progress. And to the extent that we can gather others around the topic, the guy I mentioned from San Quentin will be there. There's sort of a number of people we're talking to about forgiveness in a general sense. That'll all end up in the film. There's a guy at Virginia Tech. No, I'm sorry, Virginia Commonwealth, who has sort of the, you know, there's the five stages of despair. Mm-hmm. Of, is it despair?
Yeah, five of grief.
Grief.
Yeah.
There's a similar thing for forgiveness that is so powerful. And anyway, we'll be introducing that and incorporating it in the film.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
May I say what you asked me?
Yeah. I don't remember what it was.
You asked me to go. How do I fit in with the guy in Rwanda and the guy from prison?
Because I think in the end, look, when I was listening to what you guys were talking about on the show here, I was born in 1966. And I can, as best I know, not that many people at the age of 7 or 8 see the president leave office, right?
Yeah.
So you're new in the game and boom, the yeah. president's out.
Yeah.
So you're born in the cynical generation, right?
Yeah.
And so let's say it just keeps going and going and going until the last election. I think the most patriotic thing we could do right now, regardless of your political beliefs, is to find a way to become one place again. And I think the fact that you guys are doing that is so interesting. And, you know, you could argue that there's not a good business model around that. I don't care what your argument is.
You could make that argument.
You could. And in fact, it's been made 1,000 times. Yeah.
Well, that's just not good enough. You know. And it's also what makes that true. You know, the business model after 10 years for Pixar was a disaster.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are normal things.
Yeah.
Like no, the business model working quickly is not necessarily a sign of goodness or success.
It's great to be with you and to see you again. Thanks for sharing on the air. Thanks. And now this, when was the last time you really looked at your windows? Are your blinds crooked, busted, or just old, need to be replaced? Blinds.com will help you solve this problem. Their customer service is really what seals the deal for me. I love their customer service. First of all, if you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color, they're going to remake the blinds for free, even though they have sent you free samples to make sure that everything looks just like you know, like it does online in your home. They're going to send you the color samples. If it's not what you like once it's all done, okay, they'll remake them for you. Every order gets free shipping, and they have just everything you need, blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, whatever you need for your windows. I don't believe they have the Confederate flag or the American flag that you can just pin up in your window. I'm not sure. I know that is popular with some. Now, through July 31st, you can get 20% off site-wide at blinds.com when you use the promo code BECK. Whever it's just one room or your whole house, go to blinds.com and use the promo code BECK. Get 20% off your entire order now until the end of July. It's blinds.com. Promo code BECK. Rules and restrictions do apply.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We have a couple of great things coming on tomorrow's program. Remember last week when I played the audio from a caller that called in to a radio station in Washington, D.C., and he said, we just have to stop talking about the left and right, and he was a supporter of Donald Trump, and he said, people have to just start listening to us. We're the forgotten men. I think he's going to be joining us tomorrow with a really, truly remarkable story. We've been trying to get a hold of him for now for about a week. Also, we are going to be talking a little bit about the healthcare solution that is already happening in Ohio. If you're one of the people that have been left out and don't know what to do in Ohio and around the rest of the country, we will give you a solution on tomorrow's program. Don't miss it.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
This is an amazing stat. Yesterday, we talked to you about healthcare, and I said, you know, look, I am not going to tell you, I'm not going to continue to tell you how bad healthcare is. I'm not going to continue to tell you how bad Obamacare is and what Congress is doing, because quite frankly, what difference does it make at this point? Yes. Would you like to see some movement? Yes. Would you like to see them do something? Yes. Are they going to? Probably not. They are, so many of them are in the pocket of, you know, giant pharma or giant insurance companies, or just in it for themselves so they can gain more power and control over people like you. Why talk about that anymore? Pay attention to it, yes, but let's talk about some solutions. In the bill that failed as a gift to some states and basically some senators, they tried to sweeten the pot by giving $45 million in opioid treatment to some states. We all keep hearing that opioids is a real problem in America. Let me give you one stat. Drug overdose deaths were above 59,000 in 2016. That is the largest jump ever recorded in American history. A jump of nearly 20%. Plus, 2 million Americans are estimated to be dependent on opioids, and an additional 95 million Americans use prescription painkillers within the past year. That is twice the number of those people who use tobacco. Holy cow, this is an epidemic. Where do we go from here? How can we help? Stop looking to the government. What can you do? Aaron Brower is here, and we talk to him about this epidemic right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I will tell you that at one point in my life, I was addicted to opioids and just through medical use, and it is horrendous. It is, you know, there's something to say about drug users who are going out and scoring drugs and everything else. Another about being addicted to opioids because of pain, and you want to get off them. You can't get off them because of pain, and you can't get off them because you're addicted to them. And it is horrendous. It is horrendous. I have been addicted to alcohol, and I've been addicted to opioids. I think I would take alcohol any day of the week over opioids. Aaron Brower is here. He runs the Southern California Addiction Center and knows a little bit about it. He sounds very much like me growing up. Began using alcohol and marijuana as a coping mechanism to deal with a traumatic event. And then in his mid-20s, he became somebody who was jumping in and out of court. Welcome to the program, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. Thank you for asking. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Can you give us some stats because this is something that is going around on TV, but I don't think people know how bad this really is.
Yeah, I agree with you, Glenn. It is absolutely the number one medical issue in America. You know, when looking at just the statistics you rattled off, which is just staggering when you really think about it, is you're looking at, you know, just in opioid overdoses, not counting, you know, all the other alcohol and drugs and cocaine and all that. In 2015, you know, it was, you know, four people an hour overdosed on opioids alone, opioids alone. When you're looking at 2016, when you're looking at the overdose deaths like you talked about, I mean, it jumped jumped almost 20%. I mean, when you go all the way back to from 1980 to 2015, in 1980, there was 6,000 total drug overdose deaths, and now you fast forward to 2015, and there was 52,404 deaths.
Jeez.
I mean, it's 1.5 times greater than any other killer of Americans.
So here, than any other killer of Americans?
Any other killer of Americans.
That's not heart disease.
What's that?
That doesn't include heart disease.
It includes accidents, cancer, heart disease, everything.
Wow.
The number one killer of Americans.
Wow.
1.5 times greater than the second place killer.
Wow. You know, in looking at this, you see in places like Ohio, where heroin has really, the heroin overdoses have gone almost to zero, that fentanyl is now the killer and not heroin says something.
Yes, it does. And the fentanyl is basically just a synthetic pain, you know, painkiller. And most of the fentanyl is coming in is produced by Chinese companies. And then the Mexican cartels and whatever are mixing it in everything. When you're looking at in 2016, there have been over 35,000 drug possession where they've actually, seized drugs and then tested it. And 35,000 different cases, they're finding fentanyl and cocaine, heroin, everything. But what it is it takes very little heroin mixed with a little fentanyl, and then you get a drug that's super potent. And the reason why it's killing so many people is it's so hard to gauge. I mean, these guys are mixing it up in some warehouse or some back alley somewhere, and they're mixing it up. It is absolutely not an exact science. That's why you get some doses that are extremely strong and some doses that aren't.
I will tell you that fentanyl, I had surgery, this is years ago, and I had never even heard of fentanyl. And I mean, I have a system of a horse. You just can't put me out. I've actually woken up on the operating table. They almost have to kill me to take me out of pain. And I woke up and I was on a cocktail that included the fentanyl patch. And that patch scared the hell out of me, especially after my wife read that it said for end of life use only. But that is now being prescribed for my niece, who was in her 20s at one point, was prescribed fentanyl patches. I mean, it's absolutely. It's not something you hand out.
Glenn, one of the scariest reasons I think you're seeing this switch is I was in New Jersey at the New Jersey Hospital Association Summit. I was there with my friend Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest, and then Governor Christie was there, and Patrick Kennedy, all just absolute champions for this cause. And what's interesting is Dr. Drew gave a talk and talked about the big lobbying, the big pharma, all that kind of stuff. And one of the biggest things that made that made this pandemic grow so rapidly is when big pharma was able to lobby and get pain as the fifth vital sign. I mean, think about that. And so what happened is back in the 80s, doctors were being sued for underprescribing. Can you imagine ignoring a vital sign? And so they got the fifth vital sign to be pain. And so with that, doctors that were underprescribing, they were getting sued for underprescribing and that sort of thing. And some of them in California actually lost their licenses.
For underprescribing.
Underprescribing.
Now we have. Do you believe we have a problem of overprescribing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it is just staggering. When you're looking at some of the communities that are just ripped, like Ohio, you're looking at in certain cities in Ohio and other places across America, certain counties, there are almost 3 prescriptions for oxycodone per one citizen or per one resident. It's just absolutely staggering. The overprescribing is just absurd. And it reminds me of a kid that, for example, this kid Riley here in Southern California, he was just a beautiful, beautiful 20-year-old boy, went to Aliso Niguel High School. He was a football star, had an injury in high school, was prescribed Oxycontin, and then, came across, and then obviously that turned into an addiction, and he was struggling with it and couldn't quite kick it like you were talking about in your intro here. And what happened is he came across a doctor. Her name was Dr. Lisa is what she went by on the streets. And this one one doctor prescribed over a five-year period, prescribed over 27,000 prescriptions for oxycodone and made over $5 million, killing 12 kids.
Wow.
And you might have read about her or heard about her. She was the doctor that was sentenced to just recently 30 years to life in prison. And you know what? We need to see more of this.
So, Aaron, what's really happening? Is it people trying to get high, or is the epidemic also include high numbers of people who are in pain, have had problems, maybe still have problems, but they just can't get off of it?
Yeah, well, mainly the more common story that we see in all of our addiction centers and that sort of thing, and also at the National Addiction Foundation, is you see, you know, just the story like I just said, you know, you see more so the cases of people having surgery, getting, you know, having an injury. And what happens is if people have what you and I talk about or what you talk about as far as like core issues, whether it's a sexual trauma or whatever that is as a young adult, and you have the unresolved issues,
right,
what happens is they're you know, it's way more likely to have an addiction issue, you know, let alone just national statistics say one in four people that are prescribed OxyContin, for example, one in four will struggle with addiction issues.
The problem is I think the stigma that nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to admit that they are addicted to it. And then nobody knows what to do about it. So
why I appreciate you, Glenn. Like you wear your story of recovery like a badge of honor on your arm. I do the same. I've been sober now 15 years, coming up on 16 here. You know, recovering intravenous, you know, heroin addict and that sort of thing, and prescription pills, and been there and done that. And we do. It's the stigma. You know, the stigma that comes about this is a moral choice. This is something that, you know, they're just acting bad. You know what? No, it's a disease. You know, it's been diagnosed as a disease, and it is a disease. And so, you know, crushing that stigma, guys like you and I and that sort of thing, is one of the most important things we can do.
Okay, so Aaron, I'm going to ask you for, you know, if somebody is listening, you know, and they are addicted or they have somebody who is addicted, what can they do? You know, yesterday, you know, with the national healthcare garbage, you know, we're not going to find an answer in Washington. We need to find it ourselves. So what can people do? I'll come back to you with that here in just a second. First, this from ZipRecruiter. What does your current job search look like? Juggling emails and calls to your office? When it comes to finding the most qualified candidate, you need a different service. Other job sites depend on candidates finding you. But with ZipRecruiter, what it does is it takes your... Excuse me, I'm boring the snot out of myself right now. It takes the job description that you have, and then it goes out and it tries to find those candidates on, you know, 100 different job sites or however many job sites there are. When somebody posts and they're saying, I have these skills, great. It goes out and finds them and then also separates those from the people who are responding directly to your ad. 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. You just screen them, you rate them, you manage the candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. So you just find the right ones, and you don't have to worry about the phone calls or anything like that. Right now, you can post your job on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck, and you can try it for free. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. We use it here at The Blaze and at Mercury. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
You're listening to The Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we have won.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, welcome back to the program. I'm so glad that you have tuned in today. All right, so Aaron Brower from the Southern California Addiction Center. So, what does somebody who is listening do if they are addicted through a prescription, or if they know somebody that is addicted, what do they do?
Well, there's, you know, Glenn, there's, thanks for asking that question. There, finding the right kind of care for somebody, if you're addicted and you're trying to find the right kind of care or to see what kind of options are out there for you, it is a web, and they, and insurance companies make it very, very difficult, as difficult as they can in order to get, to allow people to access their benefits. I founded this National Addiction Foundation, this nationaladdictionfoundation.org. It's a nonprofit. And what's interesting is there is help available. It's just that people don't know how to access it or know that it's available to them. And so what happens is, for example, the most important thing, Glenn, is to get connected to the right care. Okay. You want to make sure if somebody is struggling that, that they get connected to the appropriate kind of care. Okay. Like, for example, if somebody has a, sexual, trauma from an early age or something, they need to get connected to a place that has trauma therapy. Mm-hmm. If they have recently had what's called a triggering event, there's lots of different options for them. What I'm talking about that is a lot of people don't know a lot of the things that we know in the industry and learned over the years. Like, for example, people don't know that, let's say your son or your daughter gets arrested, they end up going to jail, then they're for a drug possession, then they're released from jail. Well, that's a qualifying event to get insurance year round. Okay, so you do no longer have to wait for the open enrollment period for insurance. Like, for example, other triggering events, a divorce, going to jail, moving from state to state. Those are all qualifying events to get insurance year round. And most of these kids, what's amazing is you have these families call into our foundation, and we just guide people through that process. And you see such a high percentage of them. Let's say, little Cindy gets arrested, and then all of a sudden you tell the mom, hey, with that release paperwork from jail, you put it together with an application for an insurance company, you submit it, and then within 30 days, your insurance is available to help them. There are also a lot of free resources available to people. Okay. So what we've done is we've created a large database, a nationwide database. If somebody's calling from, San Francisco, we can help guide them through that process and getting connected to the indigent facilities around if they haven't had a qualifying event.
I don't think we have any listeners in San Francisco, so don't worry about that one.
Yeah. So, there are ways to get help. It's just a matter of having the knowledge to be able to access it. There are grants. There are all sorts of stuff out there that can help people obtain coverage in order to get care.
You know, this is what killed my mother. She was addicted to prescription drugs, and she needed to move away from the doctor because she knew the right doctor, would continue to prescribe. This is in the 70s. And so we moved away. Then she switched her drug of choice, and within a year was dead because there was no help. She tried to do it by herself, and you depending on where you are, you can't do it by yourself.
No, you can't, and that's why help is so important, and things like the National Addiction Foundation and other great resources out there. I mean, there is help available for people, passionate people like ourselves that will, hold their hand, walk them through the process. And a lot of times, what's kind of interesting is a lot of times, the addict is not ready or the alcoholic is not ready. And so one thing that, we love to do through our foundation is we'll call them back. If they call in and they're not ready, we'll talk to them for, they're 20, 30 minutes, and then we'll just, we'll call them back in 3 days and just shower love upon them. Because what happens is, the families and everybody around them, it's a painful thing addiction is, okay? They steal, they lie, when you're in active addiction, those sort of things happen. Are they thieves? No, they're in active addiction. Are they liars? No, they're in active addiction. And so what happens is the addictive process just isolates these people, as you know, and I know, just isolates these people and puts them on an island alone, and that's why it is so difficult, because half the time they're on an island alone.
All right. National Addiction Foundation.org. National Addiction Foundation.org. Aaron, thank you so much for your time. We really
thank
appreciate
you so much, Glenn. I really appreciate it.
You bet. God bless. As somebody who has gone through addiction, I want you to know I understand how hard it is, and I know what you probably feel about yourself today. And I want you to know that there is help. There are ways to stop this, because I know you want to stop it. You just don't see a way around it. Please reach out and get help, because what's waiting for you on the other side is unbelievably great and warm. Back in just a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. I'm glad you're here. For those of you who happen to get your news from the BBC, we want to clear up something that they can't seem to figure out right yet, and that is the highest number of acid attacks. Acid attacks. People throwing acid on people.
Right.
Highest ever recorded in Great Britain.
It's actually more than doubled in England since 2012, the amount of these attacks.
That's interesting.
What and the BBC cannot figure out acid attacks. Now, I know that I've heard about acid attacks elsewhere.
Probably spicy foods. If you have too much spicy food, you're going to get a bubbling.
It's acid where somebody throws like battery acid onto a woman's face.
Yeah. You're thinking of acid rain. So when the global warming causes rain to turn into acid and falls from the sky.
No, acid attacks. What I'm trying to I remember now. Sharia law allows you to punish someone like a woman who has maybe wrongly accused you of rape or something like that. She only had two witnesses. My gosh, when will the women learn? When they've wrongly accused you with rape or something, you can throw battery acid onto their face and scar them horribly for life. That's where I've heard about acid
and the BBC can't figure that out at all.
There's no mention of
radical Islam, immigrants, nothing like that.
Because they refuse to look there.
Right.
If they've already decided it can't be that. I would invite them to go to the National Institute of Health and just see either what the victim was or if maybe there is a description of the men and what they looked like. That might be why it's more than doubled in the last year. I'm just saying. Could be.
BBC disagrees. They can't figure that one out. It's really unclear. I think Stu's explanation of acid rain caused by global warming is probably very legitimate.
We know the climate's getting worse. We also know the new trend of ghost peppers used in certain sauces. It really, you're going to get a reflux reaction there.
No, I think you misunderstand what's happening here.
Look, I mean, we all know how to solve this.
What is the BBC? What are they speculating here?
They actually didn't.
And what did they say? Who did they say the victims were?
Well, the victims are generally women under 30.
Huh.
And they don't have a hypothesis for the reason for that either, which is interesting.
Now, do they have the ethnicity of the girls or maybe the ethnicity of the perpetrators?
Are you talking about profiling someone?
I'm just looking for all the facts.
Wow. Are you hearing this hatred?
Well, no. Hang on just a second.
It seemed like hatred.
Why the violent rhetoric?
Were you an ageist for pointing out that they're mostly under 30? You ageist?
Well, no. I'm just trying to... You're asking me to pin me down on who's being attacked.
Right. And you and the hate-mongering BBC felt it was important to say they were mostly under 30. I'm asking, are they mostly white? Are they mostly Hispanic? Are they mostly Arabic? Are they...
There's just no way to tell on that one. There's just no
way
to tell.
I think there is.
There's no way to tell.
Yeah, okay.
I hate the fact that you're trying to stereotype groups of people.
I'm just trying to point out that except for Vincent Price in House of Wax, I don't remember people using things like acid or, in his case, wax to disfigure or scar people.
When was the last time, seriously, we heard about this happening in the United States? in America. Have you ever heard of an acid attack on somebody?
Yeah, I believe it was, the last one I heard, I think, was in Florida. And it was a Muslim, honor thing.
Wow.
The last time I heard about it more than once is, I think, Iran, where the court gave the jury, the jury came back and said, this guy, this woman is guilty. And I believe she was guilty of accusing a man of rape, and he could take his punishment out. And one of the punishments that the court offered was acid. So Sharia law allows you to do that, at least the Sharia law in Iran. So, and it's the happiest kind of Sharia law. It's the kind in Iran.
Typical global warming denier, am I right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
Oh, no, it's not the climate. It's not the fact that we have SUVs.
It's not the most catastrophic danger to our planet that exists.
I'm just saying. Huh. By the way, we didn't talk yesterday about how much of a jerk Kermit the Frog is. Anybody follow the Kermit the Frog being fired story?
Kind of interesting.
Well, yeah. Okay, so apparently he was a foul-mouthed jerk. And, he'd put the sock puppet down, and then he'd start cussing people out and, you know, saying horrible things about the director. And I'm not, who wrote this tripe? You're a frog puppet, man. What do you mean? This isn't Shakespeare. You got your hand running a frog's mouth. And he's like, I am not reading these lines. I demand that we have new writers. And he's been the guy for, 27 years. Disney fired him because at first they just said they fired him for personnel reasons or inappropriate behavior. And I thought to myself, wow, what does Disney at this point consider inappropriate behavior? it was that he was treating people horribly. He was had a huge ego, would not train anybody to, be the understudy. So Kermit couldn't go out and, cut ribbons at, grocery stores or wherever Kermit is.
Do frogs go to grocery stores to cut ribbons?
Oh, my gosh. Why the species? Listen to the species. Mm-hmm.
Really just a question.
Huh?
I feel like potentially it would be a difficult
relationship. Are you saying you've never seen with the scissors. A frog at a ribbon cutting for a grocery store?
I feel like grocery stores
eyes,
would
man.
Not want frogs
Open
in them.
Open your eyes.
I don't know what ribbons that Kermit cuts. I just threw out a grocery store. I don't know if anybody actually cuts ribbons anymore. You know, it's like, oh, it's another Starbucks. We're going to have a ribbon. No, you're not. Just open the damn door and give me a cup of coffee. So Kermit could not do those things with all those joyous, happy people waiting for the ribbon to be cut so they could rush inside. They fired him. Disney fired him. And
I've heard he's working really hard now to get his job back.
I bet he is.
Yeah.
He started when he was 19. So ABC fires him. He calls the Henson family, who still really kind of controls a lot of the stuff. And
hoping they'd intervene on his behalf.
Yeah, because he was taught by their dad. And he's like, look, I'm Kermit the Frog. And your father taught me. This is not Kermit's voice. This is his actual voice.
Okay.
And your father, hired me to do it. He taught me. And they said, yeah, Disney called and we were actually with them. You're a jerk.
Wow.
And so he was out. He realized how much of a jerk he was. And by that evening, which I don't think is time enough to really reflect, by that evening, he was like, if they would just give me another chance, I'd take it. And they're not going to give him another chance. And you know what? Part of me is like, good.
Yeah, I believe that he can get another frog voice gig. I mean, there's got to be a lot of those, right?
But wait, I was Kermit the Frog. No, you actually weren't.
You can't be Bob the Frog now. No. You're too identified as Kermit.
Yeah.
Typecasting.
You'll never break that frog image thing.
And how hard really is the Kermit the Frog here? I mean, that's not perfect, but you can get, the realm of it
pretty
easily.
Much everyone can get in the realm of Kermit the Frog.
Yes.
And you just don't think of the guy doing Kermit the Frog being like, hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here. And then,
get me a cup of Alka-Seltzer. Man, do I have a hangover.
You don't expect that.
You know what's interesting about Kermit the Frog? Is yes. He's got the BillO'Reilly.com thing going on.
Yeah, he does.
Where he emphasizes puts the emphasis on the.
Kermit the Frog here. Mm-hmm. Kermit the Frog here. Yeah.
Maybe he could do the voice work for BillO'Reilly.com.
BillO'Reilly.com.
Yeah. There's always a gig out there.
We'll have to let him know. We'll have to let him know. There is life after Kermit the Frog. That guy is going to be sitting in a bar in 5 years as just a raging alcoholic, and he's going to look up at the bartender, and the people around him are going to look at him when he says this, and they're all going to roll their eyes as he was like, I used to be somebody. I used to be Kermit the Frog. I used to say, hi, Kermit the Frog here. Nah, nothing because of the Disney people. That's his life.
Yeah.
Now, like they don't need me to do Rizzle the Rat. Have you heard of the doing Rizzle the Rat?
There's a few of those stories that are, they're always torturous. The Fifth Beatle is always gets you on that one.
Yeah.
The two that people, or one of them in particular, the girl who did the voice of Meg on Family Guy, I always think of, she did it for 1 year. And then they switch to What's-Her-Face, who's very famous now. Anyone know their name? Mila Kunis, who is very famous now. But they had the other girl doing it for 1 year. She had 1 year of that, and the show's run for like 20 years. I mean, how much money would that have been worth if they held on to that? The guy who was on with Ryan Seacrest, that Brian Dunkelman or whatever his name was.
I love Brian Dunkelman.
But he was. There were two hosts of American Idol in the first season.
I don't remember that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no one does.
I don't remember
Brian
that at
Dunkelman
all.
Or whatever his name was.
Which is coming back, by the way. Did you know American Idol's coming back?
Yeah.
Ryan Seacrest is bringing that back. And
did you hear the Ryan Seacrest brilliance? I love Ryan Seacrest.
He's a machine.
He's pretty shrewd.
He is a shrewd machine.
Yeah.
I mean, he took over for Casey Kasem. He took over for Rick Dees. He did American Idol. I mean, the guy is a machine. So they went to him and they said, how much do you need to come back and do this? And he's like, oh, I'm not doing that again. And they're like, no, really, how much? And he's like, $16 million a season. And they're like, whoa, well, we don't have $16 million. And he's like, okay, well, I don't want to do it anyway. So then they went to, who'd they hire as one of the, like,
Katy Perry.
Katy Perry, and offered her like $16 million.
They offered her
$25 million.
And she took it.
Yeah, and she took it.
Smart.
And so they were offering, I think, Ryan $7 million. And he's like, you just paid her $25 million.
He said, I'm out.
I don't think so. When Disney came back to him, and a friend of ours, Ben Sherwood, went and negotiated with him.
Yeah.
And guess what? He got $16 million. Congratulations, Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Still less than one of the judges, which is weird. Because it's
Simon
his baby
back?
Now. No, Simon's not back.
Simon's
doing America's Talent or something, right?
Simon is the reason why we watched.
Well, I mean.
It lasted for longer than that. But yeah.
I think Ryan Seacrest might be more of a key than
I'm
going to
come out of the closet. I'm going to come out of the closet. Should I wait to come out of the closet tomorrow? Should I come out of the closet now? I've got a pretty big confession to make.
Really?
Yeah. Just made me think
about
it.
For tomorrow, because we only have a few seconds left here.
I don't know if I can.
But don't forget, if you're coming out of the closet on something, we're gonna want to spend some time with that.
I don't know. I mean, I know I'm not alone. I know I'm not the only one. When I say this, I'm gonna have to hang my head in shame. But I don't believe I'm the only one in America. I don't believe I'm the only man in America that is gonna just admit to this.
All right.
Well, I may be the only man in America who admits to it, but I may not be the only man in America who actually does this. Yeah.
I mean,
excited to hear what it is.
Enough build up. Are you going to do it?
Well, Pat told me tomorrow. He said, do it tomorrow. So I'm going to do it.
Is it going to be anticlimactic now?
Yes, probably.
I mean, you've really kind of set it up in a big way now.
I didn't. You did. You said, wait.
Do you want one more missed millions contract story?
Yes.
Mike Trout, best player basically in the major leagues.
I should have been
one
fisherman.
Of the best.
Who would have?
Yeah.
Imagine what a great name to be a fisherman, like a world class fisherman.
Yes. I mean, he's been in the league for 5 years. He's won two MVPs and finished second three times. That's how good he is. Okay, yeah, that's great. His entire career. Mm-hmm. He has the basically, with all the advanced statistics, the best wins above replacement, if you will, better than Ty Cobb.
Is it better than Bryce Harper's right now, though?
Yeah, he's the number one of the last 5 years. Harper's amazing, too.
Yeah.
Anyway. 3 years ago, signed a $144.5 million extension. Mm. If he didn't sign that, he would be a free agent this year. They went to 69, Yahoo Sports went to 69 executives and everything else to find out what he would be worth on the free agent market. The average was 10 years, $400 million.
$40 million a year?
$40 million a year. The lowest offer was 4 years, $200 million. The highest, 15 years, $600 million.
Here's our... Here's our sponsor this half hour, the USCCA, giving you a chance to win a new gun every single day this week. Today's gun, one of the most popular and trusted handguns of all time, personal defense perfect Glock 19. You want to win a Glock 19? You can win yours today. Your chance to win the Glock 19 ends at midnight tonight. So don't wait. Go to protectanddefend.com. Get your name into the entry list right now. It's easy to win. Yes, I did it. Protectandefend.com. That now. Protectanddefend.com. Enter it and see the official rules and take your chance to bring home a brand new Glock 19 tonight. But it's gone at midnight. Might as well go to you. Protectanddefend.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This tweet comes in. I'm also coming out of the closet. I hate being manipulated. I will not be tuning in tomorrow.
To find out the big reveal on Glenn coming out of the closet?
Oh my gosh, I'm coming out of the closet. I think I should come out right now.
Go ahead. Okay. Just do it right now.
Yeah, do it.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I dare you.
I'm changing my sex.
To
a woman.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
You choose that out of all the available options?
No. Here's the thing. That wouldn't really be a surprise. Everybody would be like, you already finally, really, pretty much finally. You're already there, Glenn. I'm a fan of the Great British Baking Show. And that fit in context about 10 minutes ago.
It doesn't work as well now.
Yeah, right.
No.
But it's almost a reason for me just to start taking the hormones anyway.
The Great British Baking Show.
Oh, if you've never seen it. Oh yeah.
Shockingly, I have not.
Oh yeah.
Not even once.
Oh yeah. Forget American
not even a clip.
Forget American Idol. The Great British Baking Show. Off the charts great.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.